This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am known as the last of the red hot book lovers, but I hope I'm not the last, because I am trying to turn all of you into great book lovers and also authors. I have been so excited by the response I had from listeners who decided this year to join in the National Novel Writing Month in November. Nine of the listeners who contacted me said, we joined and we did it. And they finished, which is a wonderful thing to do because it is 50,000 words in a month. And that's not easy. Now, of course, at the end of the month, you're not going to have a perfect novel. I don't think there are very many people who could have a perfect novel at the end of a month. But what it is an opportunity to test yourself, to prove to yourself that you can write, that you can knuckle down and just do what you have to do to get that writing process going. I've been really listening lately to quite a few programs where they're talking about writing. And one of the things that I've noticed, they're always talking about, oh, how can I write? I don't know how to write. When should I write? And people are always looking for some quick answer. There's no quick answer. What you have to do is find your own momentum and your own tempo. Some people will write early in the morning, like Mary Higgins Clark did when she became a widow with five children, and she had to start writing to make some money. When you have five kids, and that was in the old days, it wasn't easy to get a job. And who would want to leave five little kids, on their own? So she decided she would try to write a book, and she did it. And she did it by getting up every morning at 5 o'clock and writing. And so, you know, you can do that if that's what you have to do. Some people have more leisure if you've retired and you're sitting around and you find yourself watching daytime television, which you shouldn't be doing. Then you have to say to yourself, gee, do I want to do this for the next, if you retire at 62, if they let you anymore, I think now it's 65. And you say, oh, I'm going to do this for 20 years. I'm going to sit here and watch soap operas and game shows and I don't know what for 20 years. Think of it. Think of how boring your life is. That's not living. That's vegetating in front of that, really being a couch potato. So you don't want to do that. You want to get out there and you want to have something to do. So one of the things, of course, that you're looking for, if you're not going to, go out there and get a part-time job or stand and be a greeter at Walmart, whatever you're doing, if you have time and you can write during the day, that's fine. If you are working and you have to write at 5 in the morning, or you could be one of my favorite authors is Mike Resnick. And he's no longer with us, but he was an absolute doll. I just loved him. He wrote sci-fi. And when I first asked him to be on Joy on Paper, I said, Mike, I really love your books. You have to join me on Joy on Paper. He said, well, I can't do that. I can't. I'm never awake at 11 a.m. in the morning. And I said, Mike, what are you doing? And he said, I would be sound asleep because Mike had it. A real interesting writing process. He liked to start about 9:30 at night, and then he would go all the way through until about 5 in the morning, 5:30. And then that would be his night. And his wife allowed this, So, but I said to Mike, I can't record you at 4 o'clock in the morning. So he finally relented, and after I must have sent him 6 or 7 emails saying, "Mike, just stay awake. So finally he agreed that he would drink a lot of coffee and stay awake and talk to me at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, which was lots of fun. So again, he found the time that his brain was working. We're all different. Nobody knows exactly what time of, you know, it's perfect time to write. But there is a perfect time for you if you want to find it. It's determination and it's perseverance. And it doesn't really matter where you are when you are writing. Now, I had one man, a great guy. And he said to me, "Well, I'm going to start writing." I said, "Well, that's great." And I said, "Well, you know, have you been planning this a long time?" He said, "Yes, I've been planning for a couple of years." I said, "Well, that's good." And he said, "As soon as I get a computer," now this was back in like 2016 when I first started the program. And he said, I said, "Well, you don't need a computer, you know." And he said, "Oh, I have to have a computer to write." I said, no, you don't. I said, "And because he doesn't type." Well, at that point, he didn't type. And I said, "No, really, you know, it's pencil and paper." And he said, "Well, nobody writes like that anymore." And I said, "Well, yes, Doug Brunt writes like that." And he wrote a wonderful book called Ghosts of Manhattan. And Douglas Brunt wrote this book mostly in airports because he was at that time, he was an executive and he was traveling nonstop back and forth across the country, across the world. And he spent a lot of time in airports, and he said to himself one day, "What am I doing? No way. This is not productive." So he just took a legal pad, paper, yellow paper, and a pen, and he started writing. And he wrote, and he wrote, and it, wherever he would land up waiting for an airplane, and that's what he did. And at the end, he had this absolutely lovely book called Ghosts of Manhattan, which I love, and he wrote it in an airport by hand. And then, you know, later on, he got somebody to type it up. That's all you have to do. So you can write if you want to write, and you just have to have that will. And knowing that if you do, you will find the joy on paper that I talk about. Because that is something that it is almost like a miracle that happens to you. And I have noticed, you know, certainly so many of my guests just automatically use that word joy. And that's why I started this radio program, because I believe that there is a joy in writing, and there is also, of course, the joy of reading. So that's what I want to do here, and that's what I've been doing. And I can't believe that in March it's going to be my next anniversary. And it's 2015, it's just all sort of a blur, but it's really exciting, and I want to thank everybody for all of their really kind and sweet messages, particularly here during the holiday season. Okay, now I hope my guest is now on, because I'm really excited. She's going to be calling in any minute, and her name is Terry Parlato, so I expect her to call in any minute. And once she's on, I will be happy to start chatting with her, because she's an example of somebody who started writing late. You know, I mentioned about retirement. One of the things, you know, last year I celebrated with Eugenia Lovett West her 100th birthday online, talking about her newest book. Now, this is so fantastic. She's 100 years old and writing. And that's the joy of writing, that you can continue writing, you know, until, I don't know, you're 120 if you make it. And, you know, all the time that you're doing it, you're having fun. And so I'm really, you know, always thrilled when I talk to writers who start late in life. And it's, of course, for many of them, it's not that they really started late in life. Many of them, and this happened to quite a few of the authors I've spoken to recently, they actually started writing when they were young. They started writing in school. And as so often happens, unfortunately, in school, sometimes, you know, they just don't know how to teach writing. And they just don't know how to inspire kids to write. And you need encouragement. So this is something I want to tell really all of you, but particularly teachers out there. Your words are so important. When I interviewed Juan Felipe Herrera, the U.S. Poet Laureate, one of the first things he said to me is that his third grade teacher told him, you can do it. You can write. You're a writer. And so for that reason, I want to, you know, really tell everyone that it's one of the fantastic things in life is to be able to write. Now, I think we have a delay on Terry, but we're going to play a wonderful song. Is she on? Terry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Terry, I am so glad because I have been talking about the joy of writing. And one of the things I remembered from the last time we spoke, and I'm so excited to have you back today to be talking about your new book, What Waits in the Woods. But when you were on before, it was so wonderful. I remember reading your blog, and you talked about how wonderful and joyous it was that you finally got a book published after, you know, years and years. And that's what happens to so many people. And of course, that book was all the dark places, which was a really, really suspenseful book. And I'm so happy that, you know, here a year later, a little over a year later, you're back again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I'm so excited too.
Well, you know, Terry Parlato, when I first heard your name, I said, oh, I like that name. That's a writer's name. It's easy to remember. And so let's first talk about your new book. But then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have some commercials. But then I want to come back and I want to talk about your journey, because that is so interesting to me. But let's start with this new book. Oh, I love suspense. I love police procedural. So we have a here nice combination, and there's some also psychological, suspense in here. So tell us about this new book, and you tell us about the new book, and then I'll get to the poem.
Okay. It's the second book in the Detective Rita Meyer series, and it features a retired ballerina who is trying to come to grips with the end of her career because she was injured and wasn't really ready to retire. So it's kind of about what do we do when our dreams kind of end, and there's, you know, where do we go from there? So she decides to go back home to Greybridge, Massachusetts, a little town, and she hasn't been home really for any length of time in 11 years. There was so much going on in her life that was traumatic when she left. And so she's kind of avoided facing her past. But she decides now that her ballet career is over, it's time to go home and face kind of all of those things. Her father is very ill. Her brother is taking care of him and is kind of resentful of Esme for not helping. And so there's a lot of family issues there. But, of course, you know, it is a murder mystery. So when Esme gets home, she sees police cars in her driveway because her best friend from high school has been found murdered in her backyard near the woods.
And from there, we have to find out if this is a coincidence or if somebody is after her.
Right, right. One of the things that that was traumatic to her was her mother's death in a car accident, and Esme was in the car when she was 16, and there was a man who came up upon the accident and yelled at Esme that he was going to kill her. So she has been fearful all this time that there is some strange man lurking in her hometown who wants to kill her. And it is, she wonders that if it was a case of mistaken identity, because her best friend did resemble her to some extent.
Okay, so you've laid the groundwork here, and now, of course, this is about a detective that you introduced in book one. So tell us a little bit about Rita Mayers.
Well, Rita, she's 60 years old, and that was really important to me. When I decided to write a detective story, I felt like we had room for an older woman who was still strong and active and living her best life, and instead of, you know, being on the sidelines, because we have lots of male detectives who are older, and they're still doing their thing, and you know, and so that's very common. And I wanted just to have a female detective, kind of in the same vein. I mean, there are some out there, but I thought there was room for more. Rita is, you know, she was divorced when she had a short marriage when she was younger, but she's very independent and kind of wants to do things her own way. And, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. And she, though, does have something of a love interest that she's, you know, not so sure she wants anything serious, but she's kind of living her best life and, but also dealing with, you know, family issues and demons from her past as well.
Well, she is a fascinating character, and you're right. I liked that she was an older woman. One of the things that she, of course, does and can do is she mentors younger detectives coming along.
Yes.
And she's, you know, as you say, police officers can be very, you know, older nowadays. Now, it's not, you know, like they have to be 35 and big hunky guys. So it's nice that you introduce this character. I think she's very realistic. And a lot of opportunity for growth for her and for the people around her. So I thought it was a great choice. And you know, it's so exciting when an author, I was excited when you came on for, you know, your first book. It's always, I know it's so exciting, and that you've continued, you know, in this vein, that you're really going to turn out a series. And I think that you start off and you're not sure, but I think you've done a great job. And the couple of things I really love, first of all, I think that, you know, I want to say I really enjoyed that you make your acknowledgments right at the beginning of the book. Not everybody does that. But when Mary Higgins Clark was first on my program, I mentioned it to her. I said, well, because most people put their acknowledgments at the back. And Mary said to me, she said, you know, I am so grateful to everybody who reads my books. I just am so grateful that I want to say it right up front. And I like that you did that. And in this second book, you have your acknowledgement at the front of the book. And of course, you're mentioning your editor, which I think is nice.
Well, he's wonderful. He is so supportive, and he always has great ideas to improve my stories. And I just I'm so grateful to him and to all the people who have helped me. I'm just overwhelmed by the help and support I've gotten from people.
Well, Kensington is a great, great publishing house, and they've done a great job with you and with your covers, with your, with everything. I think it's fantastic. And of course, you also thank your agent, which is which is very nice.
Yeah, she is wonderful too. And I mean, I can't thank her enough. I mean, for taking a chance on me. I didn't really have much of a resume, you know, a writing resume, because I was teaching and raising kids and doing, I mean, I was always writing. I've been writing my whole life, but I wasn't somebody who was, you know, publishing short stories or getting my name out there. So when Marlene, you know, offered me representation, I was so grateful. And
well, I think, of course, that's Marlene Stringer, and I think it's so nice that there are agents out there. Sometimes people get sort of depressed and negative about it, that, oh, there's no agent out there, I can't find an agent on there. But it's possible. And there are, I mean, sometimes I find it so funny that I will be talking to people who want to be authors, and they'll say, well, you know, there's no agent out there, I can't find an agent, I'll never find an agent, why should I write a book? And I say, well, first of all, you should write the book just because the book is in you. But but they people have to understand, agents are looking for, they want to find writers. It's not like it's not like they're sitting back and putting their feet up on the desk and saying, oh, I don't want, I want to ignore a writer. An agent is eager to find a writer they like. And so that Marlene found you, and that she saw in you. And as I said, in when I read your book, you know, the first book, I said, well, this is great. And I wanted to read more about Rita Mayers. And so I was happy that I actually should invite Marlene to come and talk to my listeners. Don't you think so?
Oh, yes. She'd be great.
Okay. Well, I am going to do that, because one of the things, you know, I like that. And I liked also you used at the beginning of your book, for me, when the minute somebody puts a poem on, I stop and I have to read the poem. But you picked a particularly interesting poem. So tell us why you selected this poem.
Well, you know, I'm an old English teacher, so I've read lots of poetry. I love poetry, and I love Yeats. And when I read that poem, it just really resonated with me. I said, oh, is this really... It's kind of dark and creepy, but it's about a dancer, and it's sweet too. But it just it seemed to fit so perfectly with Esme's story.
Well, it does, and as a matter of fact, so perfectly. I thought, did she read the poem and then write the book, or did she write the book and then say, you know, I know a poem that goes with that?
Well, I actually wrote the book first, and I just happened to be reading through poetry on dancers. And, you know, just because I was kind of in that artistic feeling mode, and so I'm reading these poems, and when I stumbled upon it, and I do love Yeats, and when I read that poem, I'm like, oh, wow, this is it.
It is so perfect. I've always thought of that poem as actually perfect for Zelda Fitzgerald.
Yes.
I mean, isn't it perfect? And I'm going to tell people a little bit about it, because it's called Sweet Dancer. And as you mentioned, of course, it's by... William Butler Yeats. And it is so interesting. And some people might have actually heard this poem, because it's a famous poem. And it starts off, the girl goes dancing there on the leaf-sown, new-mown, smooth grass plot of the garden, escaped from bitter youth, escaped out of her crowd, or out of her black cloud. Ah, dancer, ah, sweet dancer. Now, that's the beginning of the poem. And it has been actually recorded in several different versions by singers. And one of the ones that I like is the one by the Water Boys. Have you heard that one?
I have not. I'll have to look that up.
It is fantastic. They changed a few words, you know, to get the right lyrics in. But... they've done a great job. And this is, as a teacher, you know how important it is, really, the study of words. And I'm glad that teachers are still reading Yeats. I don't know if they are actually doing it in school nowadays, but it's so funny. I remember, of course, I'm going... Many people have seen his name, which is spelled Y-E-A-T-S, and it's William Butler Yeats. It's pronounced Yeats, and he was, of course, you know, a Nobel Prize winner for literature, I think, back in the 1920s, and he was Irish, and... And one, my teacher, which, you know, in those days, we our teachers actually were, you know, very excited about poetry. And I remember the teacher said, because everybody would pronounce it Yeats, because of course the great poet Keats. And so my teacher said, you can remember it. You just remember it. It's Yeats, Yeats, Yeats. That poor sod is going to go through the pearly gates. Easy to remember.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right. So, that's great.
Yeah. So I always thought that was so cute. But it worked. And again, this love of language and the love of words, which obviously you have.
Yes. Yeah. It's, you know, I love teaching English. It was just, it was a wonderful career, and it worked, you know, it just, for a writer, I can't think of a better career.
Oh, you've got the groundwork there, and it comes through in your writing. I mean, you know, for you, the words probably come easier than for a lot of people who are starting off. But it's all there. It's so funny. I talk to people, and because we had this NaNoWriMo recently, and it's sort of in my head, nine of my listeners decided to do it. And one of the things they said, well, I don't, you know, I don't know a lot of words. And I said, most of the best work is, you know, simple words that speak to the heart. So you've certainly done that.
Well, I've been a voracious reader my whole life, as well as a writer, and I think those things, of course, go hand in hand. And I grew up in a family where it was kind of a crazy family, but very interested in language and words. And you know, I think of the things that my grandmother used to say, words that she used that are disappearing even. And it's just, I mean, I just love language.
Well, it comes through in your books. Now, I have to take a commercial break, but we'll be back in a few minutes, and then we're going to talk more about your journey as a writer and about your blog post. I remember your blog post, so we'll be talking about that too. Okay, so let's just hold on, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
All right.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Hurting Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Hurting Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Hurting Butterflies.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Fantasy with a Z, and I am back with my guest, Terry Parlato, and we are talking about her newest book, What Waits in the Woods. And it is one of those atmospheric kind of books. It gives you a few chills and thrills, and it, as always, it's with great writing. It will take you into the story, and this one is particularly interesting because it's about a girl who was a ballet dancer and was injured, and she comes back to her hometown, and a lot of things start happening. So, Terry, thanks for holding on.
Sure.
Okay. Well, this, as I said, this is book number 2 in the Rita Myers series, and I hope that you're working on book number 3, because I think Rita's a fascinating character, an older detective who has a lot to teach people.
I am. Book 3 is in the works.
Okay, that's it. That's what I want to know, because I'm always eager for the next book. Now, you know, before the break, you mentioned you come from a crazy family. And I was thinking, you know, that is nice. You have to, you know, people, if you have a crazy family, appreciate them. Just look at them, if the craziest ones, you say, you know, you're really great, Uncle George. You are. You're just perfect. Just what I need to come out with a great character. So you know, you can always make characters out of all of your crazy family, and actually, they, in the end, they all love it.
Yeah, it's I draw a lot of inspiration from family and friends that I've known all through all the years.
And do they? I mean, do your family enjoy reading your books and saying, well, did you base that on me? I didn't really throw the coffee cup or something like that.
Yeah, they get a little bit paranoid, but I haven't done anything that I think would really embarrass anybody. So,
no.
So they're pretty good with it.
That's right. They have to read. They have to know it is all done in love.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure they're very proud of you. Now, back to the book, What Waits in the Woods. What is nice about this, one of the things I've been looking at it, people are always asking me about that first sentence. What should my, you know, people get sometimes, they get all, you know, crazy about, I need that perfect first sentence. But the first sentence doesn't always come to you as the first sentence. You might be writing your book for quite a while before you realize that you want a different first sentence, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And back when I was teaching, I did teach creative writing, and I always told kids, don't think you have to start at the beginning, because sometimes you're just not sure about that first sentence or that first paragraph. But you've got that story percolating. Jump in wherever, you know, it occurs to you that this is what, you know, when you've got something to write. Because, I mean, that first chapter is something you can come back to, and especially once you've fleshed out the story some, I think that brings that first chapter into focus a little better than thinking, looking at the blank page and saying, okay, I've got to start with this perfect first sentence, perfect first chapter.
Exactly, exactly. Now, in your case, in fact, you have two opening sentences because you have two different characters. So each one has a sort of, each person has an opening sentence. And of course, first is Esme, and she is the former ballet dancer who's now, some people might think she's paranoid and nobody's after her, but maybe somebody is after her. And so that, you know, is how you build up the story. Now, your first sentence there in for her is, sometimes the only thing you can do is leave. And then it goes on and says that was my mindset when I was 18. Well, I don't know if that was the first sentence you wrote, but that's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. I really don't remember how that came out, whether I went back and wrote that or whether that just came to me right at the start. To be honest, I don't remember.
Well, that's okay, because, you know, when Mary Higgins Clark was on my program, when I first started the program back in 2015, and I was, you know, trying to be really clever and really smart, when I did my second interview with her, the first interview, I was so nervous talking to her, I don't remember what I said, but the second interview, I thought, well, I'll show her how really clever I am. And I used three of her opening sentences, like in my first opening. And then I realized she doesn't remember them. I mean, they were.
I believe it. Yes.
They were from, you know, we were talking about book, what, I don't know, 45 or whatever. And they were from like book 2 and 7 and 8 or, you know.
Oh, wow.
She didn't remember those first sentences, which I thought was so funny. But so, you know, first sentences are great, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, the end all and be all that people think they
are.
But the second sentence, the one for the opening for Rita, who's the detective, now that's a little bit more biting. I'll read that one. The body is lying in the weeds at the edge of the woods. The woman's red sweater, a beacon in the gray day. Aha! Now that is also an interesting first sentence.
Again, I don't remember.
You see this? This is what I want to say to people. This is why it's so good to be a writer. You write and you hone that. Now, when people are reading it, and both of the sentences are I think will interest people, because when in the first sentence you're saying, you know, Esme's saying, you know, she had to leave. Well, right there you say, well, why'd you have to leave? What was going on? What happened to you? You know, you're so young. We know in the second sentence that she's 18 years old when she felt like that. Something definitely was going on with her. And then, of course, the second one, Rita's, the minute you say, it's very visual because you're saying the woman's red sweater on a gray day. And one can imagine that. Immediately.
Well, I think, you know, with Rita being a detective, she, you know, of course, is very observant. And so that, I guess, is why that came to me. What does Rita see, you know, when she gets to this crime scene?
Exactly. I think it works beautifully.
Well, I'm glad it was, you know, looking back on it, I'm like, did I really pay enough attention to those beginnings? Really? You wonder.
No, you did. You did. You did a good job, because with both of them, you draw both stories. I think exactly pulls the reader in, and that's what you did. And so sometimes it's sort of a magical process, I think, that it happens. And when you write it, then after, you know, you've written for a while, when you go back and you say, yeah, you know, I wrote that. And that doesn't that happen sometimes, that you come back to your writing and you say, gee, that's good. Did I write that?
Sometimes I go back and I'll say, yeah, that turned out all right. Then there are other times, you know, I write something and go back and look and think, ooh, that needs work.
Well, I mean, one of
but
the
hopefully
things,
you get to that the, before it goes. Before
yeah,
it gets
before it goes. To the editor. But now, in, you know, your process, so for writing the first book was probably took longer than writing the second book, because once you have a contract, that does seem to stimulate the imagination.
Yeah, I write fairly quickly. I think it's just because I've written my whole life. It's just what I, you know, it's what I do. When I'm walking around, you know, doing errands or driving or whatever, I'm writing stories in my head. It's just all the time. So sometimes I'm too much in my bubble. But I think that because of that my writing process goes pretty quickly. Not that it's always good, but I always have stories percolating.
Well, that's what a writer's supposed to do. That's what we do. We observe, we think, and we process it, and hopefully we have, this is where it comes down to whether or not you have it within you to actually sit down and get it on paper. Because a lot of people dream about writing. That's what I talk about at the beginning of the program, that Joy on Paper is a program for writers and those who dream of writing. But I want more and more people to stop just dreaming and to sit down and do it. Now, you did that.
Right.
And I'm glad you mentioned the bubble, because it is, when you're in that bubble and you're writing, it is a lot of fun. But now you've had a year since you wrote your blog. I think it was back in November of 2022. You wrote your blog about having to get out there and meet people, get involved in social media, and doing all of that. How have you found that process now that you've had a year of that?
Well, I really enjoy talking to people. I really enjoy, you know, the book events and conferences and things. I guess that's the old teacher in me, too, just talking to people about books. I love that. But social media has been a challenge, because before I was published, I was not on social media, other than I had a personal Facebook page that my sister kind of badgered me into doing, because she lives, you know, she lives in San Francisco area. I'm in Atlanta area. And she was like, well, you won't be able to see pictures of your nieces if you're not on Facebook. So I did that. But I would post something maybe twice a year if I was lucky. But I would always look at her posts and things. So it was nice for that. But having to get on other platforms and figure them out and promote myself that way as an author, it is not, does not come to me naturally. And I'm sure that I have messed stuff up on, you know, my different platforms and not hit the right button or answered people that I should have, as I didn't know any better. You know, social media has been a really one of my biggest challenges.
Well, it is for all authors, not just for startup authors, even really authors who have been best-selling authors for years and years. Have found it very difficult to get into this social media side. So what have you found works easiest for you?
In what way?
I mean, do you like Facebook, Instagram? Which one has been easier for you?
The easiest for me, I think, has been Instagram. I'm kind of a visual person, so pictures, it's more of a visual medium. And it's not too hard for me to use, but I'm not sure what all of the, you know, icons do. So I don't know that I'm doing everything I should or doing what I'm supposed to. But that's probably the easiest for me so far.
Now, have you gone to any book conventions like BoucherCon or anything like that yet?
I went to BoucherCon not this past year. I went the year before when it was in Minneapolis. And this year I went to Killer Nashville, because that's close enough I could drive, and I just had such a busy year. So, but I'm registered for BoucherCon next year, which will be in Nashville. So that'll be closer, it'll be a little easier to get to. But so far, those are the ones I've been to.
Yeah, I'm registered for that one too, because I like Nashville, and it will be an opportunity to see so many of the authors that I've interviewed. And I haven't been to one since it was, I don't know, before the pandemic, the one in Dallas, because I didn't want to travel. I still don't want to travel, but to Nashville, it's not so hard, and it's easier, I think, to get around than I don't like the ones in like New York City and Los Angeles. They're too big. I think it will be fun. And I love when I remember when we had BoucherCon in St. Petersburg, and it was so wonderful. It was really, I had just started Joy on Paper, and I really didn't understand the dynamics between the author and the fans. And I'm sure that you really appreciate when people contact you and they send you nice, emails or respond to your posts, don't you?
Oh, it makes it all worthwhile. I mean, the people have been so nice. And when they actually contact me to say that they liked my book or that it was somehow meaningful to them, I'm overwhelmed. I'm like, that's a, that's the greatest thing.
Yeah, it is. I was so impressed. As I said, the one in St. Petersburg and Karen Slaughter was there. And I was standing next to a group of these women, and they were from Minnesota. And they were very excited. Four women, they had flown down together to come to BoucherCon. And they were fans. And they flew down because they wanted to see Karen Slaughter. They were her fans. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm a fan of a lot of authors, but I don't know that I'd get on a plane and go to, you know, to see them. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I would be because I want to interview them. But as before, as I think of myself as a civilian, I couldn't imagine doing something like that. But they do, and they really. That's what happens when you really write a character that people start caring about. And that's why it takes time. You know, it's not necessarily an overnight thing, but as you build your character, as you get fans, and you keep in contact with them, I hope that you have a wonderful mailing list and that you stay in contact with your fans. One of the best things, I know social media is difficult, but the easiest actually is newsletters. If you write a newsletter, if you collect wherever you go, any person you meet, any person who contacts you, collect their email address, because newsletters are very effective. As somebody like Barbara Hinsky, who has, you know, her books are turned into Hallmark movies. It comes from staying in contact with people. So that's the best way, and I recommend this to all authors. Just build that email list and keep your people who are interested in you always waiting for that next book and wanting to know what happens. For example, what's going to happen to Rita? What's her next step? What's her love life? What's her family life? And that's one of the best ways to really promote your books.
Yeah, I have noticed that a lot of authors do use newsletters, and I even subscribe to some, and I've been thinking about that.
I'm telling you, that is the best one. I think it's the best way, because then you have this personal connection, and they become that your reader, your fan becomes interested in where your character's going. And once the character becomes real to them, then they talk about it. They talk about it to their friends. So, that's one of the things I'm going to suggest in 2024 to all authors. Build that newsletter, email list, and you know, keep your promotions up. Now, this is book two. You've got book three coming out. So by the time you have book three ready, you should have a massive mailing list, and you can send out, and right there you have a whole group of fans. So, Terry, I really thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. It's been a joy to talk to you, and I want everybody to check out Terry's book, What Waits in the Woods, and it's from Kensington. They've done a really sharp cover, very bright, and it really attracts you. So, Terry, thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I'm so grateful. And hopefully I'll see you at BoucherCon.
Okay, absolutely. And as soon as I know your release date for the next book, you'll be on my calendar, okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Terry Parlato. And the name of the book is What Waits in the Woods. And it's Detective Rita Myers, number two in the series, and it's you know, a series builds up momentum, and it needs time. So I think she has a great character in Rita. I like her, and you know, well, 60 years old is not very old if you ask me, and I think it's just actually a perfect age for a very wise and intelligent detective. So anyway, do check out Terry Parlato. And I liked also book one. And as I mentioned, she's a Kensington author. And another Kensington author that I love is Carol J. Perry. And Carol J. Perry, I just actually spoke to her, and I asked her what she's doing? Why bother her? Because I know she's writing. She's writing. She is one of these people who, when you know she has a deadline to go, she just pulls out all the stops and works like crazy, and loves every minute of it. That's the wonderful thing, and that's why I keep telling you there is so much joy when you see your words on paper. And Carol is working on book number 15 in her Witch City Mysteries. My goodness, this is so exciting. She was my first guest in the studio in 2015 for book number one. And now look at it. All these years later, she's up to working on book 15. So this is the exciting life of an author who has decided that they're going to actually produce, because that's what you have to do. You can be a writer and write, but if you don't get out there and actually finish a book and get it published, or publish it yourself, it doesn't matter. You're not really an author. So I do want to say that's fantastic news that I got from Carol, that she is working on book number 15, which my sister, by the way, Natalie, who is known as a connoisseur of cozy mysteries, is so eager to read, because she wanted Carol to get married. Carol's character, Lee Barrett, to get married. And then she was eager for that. And then once Lee Barrett got married, my sister kept saying, She's got to have some twins. We need babies. So it took Carol all the way to book 15, and now we're looking to the next one. Okay, everybody, thank you so much. It's been wonderful, all of your emails for the holidays. I really appreciate them. And say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And away we go. Bye-bye now.